Welcome back. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow on our show, continuing coverage of the tragedy in the Patapsco River. Baltimore City Councilman Zeke Cohen and Baltimore County Councilman Todd Crandall talk about next steps after the collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge. Plus, the legendary artist Joyce Scott joins me, and we'll look at her retrospective of her work at the BMA, and Jaywin Russick reviews Mexodus at Baltimore Center Stage. So that's on the way tomorrow, and joining me now is Dr. Keshet Pollock Porter, the chair of the Department of Health Policy and Management at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. She's a scholar in the field of health equity. She's the co-author of a book called Policy Engagement, which is a guide for people in the public health field. And she is the first African-American to be named as the chair of a department in the 100-plus-year history of the School of Public Health. Dr. Keshet Pollock Porter joins us on Zoom from her office at the Bloomberg School. Dr. Pollock Porter, welcome.
Thank you, Tom. It's great to be here. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. So tell us about the Health in All Policies Initiative, which you have started at the Bloomberg School. This is something relating health and health issues to all sorts of legislative policy initiatives, not just here in Maryland, but other places as well.
Yeah, thanks, Tom, for this question. I'm excited to talk with you about Health in All Policies, which may sound like a term that's a little complicated, but really it recognizes that health is influenced by many factors beyond healthcare, and in many cases, beyond traditional public health activities. It's an approach that uses data and works together across sectors to say, how can health be considered when it's often not at the table, right? So we can think about decisions in housing or planning or transportation or energy. These decisions can benefit or harm health. And what we're doing is trying to elevate those potential impacts to mitigate them and to help improve the health of all populations.
Yeah, because I guess, of course, one's health is definitely influenced by all sorts of things that don't have anything to do with the way your body is working, right? I mean, the external factors can be very significant.
Absolutely. And what we're doing is we are using training and research and practice and really helping to have individuals say, before we make this decision, how could this decision that doesn't seem obviously connected to health impact health? And that's really what's exciting about the work that we're doing. And you know, this isn't a new concept in Maryland, I'll say. Several years ago, it was Senator Nathan Pulliam and Delegate Robin Lewis had actually sponsored a Health in All Policies work group bill, and I was part of that work group at the state where we started to look at this. So, you know, I think Maryland's primed for more work in this area.
So you have a couple of tools that you use, well, more than a couple. I think you have four or five of them. One of them is called the Health Impact Assessment Tool. So you all developed a way of figuring out what the impacts to health would be if it's a transportation bill or a housing bill, as you mentioned, or, you know, a public safety bill. Tell us how the Health Impact Assessment Tool works.
Yeah, so a health impact assessment was developed many, many years ago, mostly outside of the US. And it's a way of systematically looking at how could a decision impact health, impact equity. And the goal is to develop recommendations informed by the data to then try to improve health and to try to mitigate those harms. This is an area I'm really passionate about. I've been working in for about 15 years, and I developed a course at Hopkins over a decade ago, and I just finished teaching 123 graduate students on how to do health impact assessments, the process. And we actually partnered with the Baltimore City Transportation Department, Department of Transportation, on a project.
Dr. Keshet Pollock Porter is my guest. She's the chair of the Department of Health Policy and Management at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. We're talking about the Health in All Policies Initiative at the Bloomberg School, which measures the impacts to health of various bills that legislative bodies like a city council or a general assembly would consider. If you'd like to join our conversation, our number here at midday, 410-662-8780. Our email is midday at WIPR.org. transportationimpact.org. So tell us a little bit about this project with the Baltimore Department of Transportation. Again, that's one thing that, you know, it's almost counterintuitive to think that a transportation bill would have anything to do with health impacts. But if you think about it, of course it does. So tell us what your folks were doing with the Baltimore transportation people.
Yeah, exactly what you just said, Tom. Of course, there are those impacts. And so what we do in this class is we work on a real project, and excited that the Baltimore City Department of Transportation is considering some opportunities to improve pedestrian safety in various areas in the city, and sort of thinking through where to do that. And so what the students in my class did is that they looked at different corridors, looked at different strategies, and how those strategies could impact health. And really the goal was to say, how do we do this in a way that's equitable? How do we think about not just pedestrian safety, but even air quality and how that can impact people when they're outside walking, or think about other risks to bicyclists or other people, or think about accessibility. I mean, these were all of the things that were highlighted in the assignment that my students did. And what we're doing is we're sharing that information with the city Department of Transportation to help them as they're moving forward in this project.
Do you make specific recommendations to, you know, a Department of Transportation? Do you say, oh, you shouldn't have a bike lane on this side, it should be on the other side, or maybe you should have a roundabout instead of a straight through thing? I mean, do you make that kind of level of detailed recommendations as to what they should do to mitigate health impacts?
Yes, absolutely. And we do that in a way that's grounded in the evidence. So in terms of what research has been done, and also talking to people in the community. So really centering equity and the equity approach in the process is also really critical. You know, in my class, we just sort of touched the surface of this. We, you know, it's an 8-week course. So we've really laid a good foundation for subsequent work to really dig deeper. But certainly to say, if we want to promote health, this is the way that you might consider this approaching this strategy. Or if you want to mitigate those harms, this is another way to think about approaching that strategy.
And talk about the distinction between the equity impacts and health impacts. We hear a lot of people say that, you know, they want to develop policies and examine them through a lens of equity. That's a phrase I hear a lot from lawmakers with whom I speak. What does that mean to you, looking at a policy initiative or a particular statute through the lens of equity?
Well, equity is a core value when we think about health in all policies. And what that means are sort of two things. One is intentionally centering the individuals who would be impacted by that proposal or that decision. How are we bringing those individuals who tend to be historically marginalized into the conversations so that they are part of the decision-making process? So that's one way that we sort of amplify equity through this work. The other way is to think about how will those health impacts disproportionately impact certain communities. So we want to look at those potential differences based on race, ethnicity, gender, socioeconomic status, ability, and the intersection of those different groups. And so those are the ways we center equity and apply an equity lens to this work.
So when it comes to, you know, assessing equity and health impacts, you have this health impact assessment tool that you use. You also have something called a health note. What's that?
Yeah, so we created a legislative health note, and this really draws on the fiscal note concept in a number of legislatures. You know, here in Maryland and many other states, bills have fiscal notes. And we realized a health impact assessment was really too rapid, particularly in a legislative session like in Maryland that's, you know, 90 days long. And so what this does is it's akin to a fiscal note, and it sort of lays out what are the implications for health if that bill goes forward. And why this is so important is that we focus on committees where health isn't central, right? So like where we started, thinking about housing bills or thinking about a bill related to an area that doesn't seem connected to health at all. So what we want to do is bring that health information to the policy process and share that information during a bill hearing. And we're testing this in a number of states across the country and in some localities. And we hope to garner support to do that here in Maryland as well in the future.
And you mentioned a fiscal note. That's been part of the legislative process forever now. You know, the Congressional Budget Office in Washington says, okay, if you pass this law, here's what it's going to cost. But so you're sort of doing the same thing. Instead of giving a dollar amount, you're saying this is what it's going to cost in terms of health impacts.
Exactly, exactly. And here are the ways that this bill could benefit health and improve health. And here are the ways it could harm health. And we also lift up, again, these equity impacts as well. And the hope is that this information is shared and taken and considered during the legislative process. And we've seen in other areas that the evidence from these health notes have actually been cited during bill hearings, or the legislators have lifted them up during amendments or other parts of the legislative process.
I'm really interesting. It turns out it's a physician, Dr. Clarence Lamb, who is a senator from Howard County, who introduced a bill in this session in the General Assembly about consumer credit scores. And you have worked with him and the folks who are moving that bill through the legislature. And again, you think, well, what do consumer credit scores have to do with public health? But explain what that connection is. Explain how you're involved in that legislation.
Yeah, so let me just clarify that we're not working with Senator Lamb. We have just a number of bills on our team that we're looking at to see where there's potential for this in the future. So we're looking at that now. But this consumer credit report bill is a really good one, because as you said, one might not think how a credit score can impact health. But we know that credit scores pervasively guide, you know, what financial products and resources are available to aid in everybody's everyday life, whether it's, you know, mortgage interest rates or school loans or automobile loans. So we know that credit scores have implications for households. And so what we would do in that type of analysis is to say, well, if this bill goes forward under these proposals, here are the ways that health could be improved by this type of bill, or health can be impacted by this type of bill. And then we would, you know, share those findings. And so what we're doing in Maryland right now is trying to figure out, you know, you have 3,000 bills that come through. How would you even try to figure out which ones to do? And so we're just sort of thinking through the process here.
And we'll talk a little bit more about that on the other side of a quick break. Dr. Keisha Pollack Porter is the chair of the Department of Health Policy and Management at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. We'll have more with Dr. Pollack Porter on the other side of a quick break. As I mentioned, 410-662-8780. When we come back, our email midday@wipr.org. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is Baltimore's NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Across the country, in academia and corporate America, DEI programs are under attack. Recently here in Baltimore, Dr. Sherita Golden stepped down from her position as Chief Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Officer at Johns Hopkins Medicine, following criticism from Donald Trump and Elon Musk and Fox News and others about an essay that Dr. Golden published in a newsletter that defined the word privilege in a way that they disagree with. DEI has become a political flashpoint and certainly a talking point in conservative media. If you've just joined us today, my guest is Dr. Keisha Pollack Porter. She is the first Black person to be appointed as the chair of any department at the Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. It took the school more than 100 years to appoint an African-American department chair. And since her appointment in 2022, one other person of color has also been named a chair. Dr. Pollack Porter joins us until the top of the hour. You are welcome to join us as well. 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wipr.org. www.healthimpact.org. So, Dr. Pollack Porter, what do you think about what happened at the Hopkins Medical Institution, which is different than the Bloomberg School, with Dr. Sherita Golden, and the fact that she was basically forced to step down as the chief of diversity, equity, and inclusion?
Yeah, Tom, I'm glad you raised this important issue of DEI in higher ed. And, you know, Dr. Golden is someone I respect a lot personally and professionally. So I don't want to speak, you know, for her or specifically about a situation involving her. But what I do want to say is it is so important that leaders in higher ed really lean in to embrace the values of what we at the Bloomberg School call IDARE, which is inclusion, diversity, anti-racism, and equity. And as you noted, you know, there's no denying that there's a concerted attack underway from how we teach history to how we read to how we speak about our life experiences. And it's important to support those principles of IDARE at a school. And I really applaud our dean, Ellen McKenzie, how she's promoting the principles at the school that we are also promoting here in the Department of Health Policy and Management that I chair.
Now, the School of Public Health overall is a very diverse place, as far as I can tell. I mean, you have international students from literally all over the world pursuing their degrees, you know, masters in public health and that kind of thing. Is the fact that the school is, you know, diverse kind of to begin with, was that a factor in your hiring? Was diversity a factor in your hiring, do you think?
I think diversity in terms of perspectives, in terms of a number of factors, I think is always important to consider when people are coming in to bring their lived experiences or different topics. You know, one of the things I'm really proud of in our department is that we have faculty who represent a wide range of identities, are also working on a variety of topics. Many of them have been on your show before. And it really matters because what we see is that people often engage in research that's identified by their life experiences. You know, for me, I'm a Black woman, and my research, not surprisingly, includes promoting health equity amongst Black people and looking at the structural drivers of health inequities like racism. So that's how I show up in my work. And I would say we are a stronger department and school because of the diversity of perspectives, of topics, of important public health issues that we're looking at.
So as the chair of a department, or specifically the chair being the chair of this, of your department, the Health Policy and Management Department, what does that include? I mean, obviously, a researcher does research, but if you're the chair of a department, it's a broader portfolio, right?
Yes, exactly. I spent some of my time doing research. You mentioned this book that that I published earlier last year with some co-authors. And then I get a chance to run this department that is comprised of outstanding faculty, staff, and students who are focused on the mission of improving health and are leaning into using policy to do that. And we focus on policies at the state, local, federal, tribal levels. And I tell people I have the best job. We have the best people here, and we're able to really make a difference to the work that we're doing that touches so many pressing areas that need to be focused, that we need to be focusing on.
The School of Public Health at Hopkins is the oldest public health school in the country, right? Do I have that right?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What do you think the significance of the fact that there are now two Black department chairs at the Bloomberg School of Public Health, which is the oldest school of its sort in the country. It's been a leader forever. How do you explain, how do you feel about the significance of your appointment as an African-American woman?
I think it's highly significant. You know, I started as chair in 2022 and made a decision to start during Black History Month because of the significance of the appointment. And so excited that my journey as a leader in the school and a different leader, I was in leadership before I stepped into this role. But it's critical that we see people of color in leadership positions for a few reasons. One is the value of witnessing upward trajectory and really creating viability for people who see individuals who look like them in positions of influence. I was talking to somebody yesterday at another institution who commented on how when they look around their institution, they don't see anybody who looks like them. And the value of being in a place like this where you can see what's possible, where you then can go in and say, well, is the culture different? Because you have somebody who is bringing their own identity and authenticity to their leadership. And what does that mean for the people who are in that department? So I would say it is significant. It's something I'm proud of, and excited that we have other colleagues. We have a diverse, there are 10 chairs and there's a diverse group of chairs who are all leaders and leaning into the principles of IDARE that I mentioned earlier.
Yeah. And, you know, back to what we were talking about before the break, the Health in All Policies initiative, you mentioned, you know, the legislature, like the Maryland legislature considers, you know, around 3,000 bills every session just in that 90-day crammed in period. And you've got to choose what bills to think about and to study and to look at. So I would imagine, you know, that diversity is extremely important when it comes to making decisions about what kinds of bills you're going to, you're going to look at seriously.
You know, one of the factors we consider when we call it sort of screening to see which bills are relevant is we look at what's the impact and what's the impact on certain communities, right? So we do look at how does equity show up in an issue or potential impact as we're trying to identify. And we also look to say, well, where's the evidence? You know, what do we know about sectors where there's a lot of science, a lot of research showing the connections between that sector and health. So for example, education is one where there's a lot of data, or transportation and planning, or housing. And so we're able to, again, bring health to the forefront of those conversations where it's often overlooked in a way that I think is really impactful.
I interviewed a couple of years ago a woman named Harriet Washington, who's a medical science writer, who wrote a really interesting book about inequities in medical consent for research. Do you all delve into research and research protocols and methods? Is that part of any of the research that you all are doing?
It's not. We don't go in that area. Where we actually find the most value is where health isn't at the table, so to speak. That's what we think of. And so oftentimes, decisions that are coming through, you know, the Environmental Matters Committee or some other committee where health doesn't seem so central, Tom, people aren't really talking about the health impacts. So we find value in bringing those to the forefront. So something like informed consent or medical procedures like that, to me, health is already at the table. So what we would rather do is say, well, let's look at those housing bills. Let's look at those energy bills. Let's look at those bills related to taxes or to other factors and say, how could this impact health?
Yeah, that's really interesting. Does your work dovetail at all with Dr. Lisa Cooper's work, who heads the Hopkins Center for Health Equity? Again, that's over at the Hopkins Medical side. It's not the Bloomberg School of Public Health. But I wonder if there are any parallels to the work that Dr. Cooper's doing and that you're doing.
I would say the parallels are around the focus on health equity. Certainly, Dr. Cooper is another person who I admire greatly and respect and is a colleague and collaborator. And it's really around, I would say, we have a shared emphasis and focus on health equity, but certainly we're looking at it from different sides. So our work really focuses more on public policies, on legislation. We have a new effort in looking at decisions that are made by courts and how that impacts policies and trying to, again, bring health to the forefront. So certainly we have a shared interest and commitment to looking at issues like structural racism and other factors in health equity, but that's really where we have our ties. Otherwise, we're just working in different areas.
Dr. Keisha Pollack Porter is the chair of the Department of Health Policy and Management and the director of the Health in All Policies Initiative at the Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. Thanks so much for being on the show. I really appreciate it and enjoyed our conversation.
Thanks, Tom. So did I. Have a great day and enjoy opening day.
And that's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, more coverage of the collapse of the Key Bridge and the impact the bridge's demise will have on our community with Baltimore City Councilman Zeke Cohen and Baltimore County Councilman Todd Crandall. Plus, the artist Joyce Scott talks about a huge show of her work at the Baltimore Museum of Art, and J. Wynn Russick reviews Mexodus at Baltimore Center Stage. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. Have a great day.